Parshas Boy is, if you look at it on the surface, it seems to be a very joyous time. The Holocaust of Klal Yisrael is coming to the end. Klal Yisrael are gearing up to leaving Mitzrayim, last three of the Makkos, just before getting the first mitzvahs of the Chodesh Elohim. We start becoming Jews. We're getting dignified mitzvahs, halachos are called Pesach, of how we're not supposed to break bones. In other words, we're dealing here with a whole different level. We're on a verge of emancipation, or being released, or being going out of Mitzrayim. It looks a very, very happy, you know, jolly parasha. Besides that, there's one particular Rashi over here that puts a damper, quite a serious damper, on the whole spirit, and the entire time must have been extremely difficult for Klal Yisrael. The pasuk says in Perek Yud, Pasuk Chof Gimel, in the Makov Cheshech, Liro Ishes Ochiv, a person not see his brother, Lekoma Ishmi Tachtov, and a person could not move, Sheshes Yomim. In other words, Hakadosh Baruch Hu created a Makkah that Mitzrayim became paralyzed. The Mitzrayim became totally paralyzed. In other words, they weren't affected, they weren't being punished, they weren't being traumatized, they were paralyzed, literally paralyzed, for 3 days. But, L'chol b'nei Yisrael ho'ya or b'mishvois on Klal Yisrael had or. Says Rashi, why do we need such a very distinctive makkah? So he explains that, says Rashi over here, v'loma hevi aleim choshech, why do you bring along choshech? Because they were in Klal Yisrael in that generation, Roshoim, they did not want to leave Mitzrayim. Umesu b'shloishes mei afela, and therefore they died in these 3 days of darkness. Kdei shayiru Mitzrayim b'mapalosom, that the Mitzrayim should not see in their downfall, they should not see them their punishment. V'yoimru and shbichil Hashem, and they should say, afheim loikin kamoinu. They are also being punished like we are being punished. And therefore, ultimately, what Rashi is saying over here is that Klal Yisrael had many, many people in there, we'll see how many, who were not fitting to leave Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to create a situation that Mitzrayim could not see them being punished, the Klal Yisrael being punished, otherwise it would be called Chil Hashem. Now, let's just get perspective over here. How many people are we talking about who were punished?
80%.
So, there's different pshatim. Yeah, but the most liberal pshat, most conservative pshat, let's go to the most conservative pshat, let's stick with that, is that one-fifth, v'chamoshim means one-fifth of Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim. 600,000 men left Mitzrayim. Right? Which means you have to add on to 600,000 men, there are at least 600,000 women. Correct? So it's 1.2 million. Talk about people who are above the age of 60. We don't know how many there were. Obviously there were many. And talk about children below the age of 20. There were many. There must have been about probably close to 12 million people left Mitzrayim. Okay? But let's just talk about the men and the women at the age of 20 to 60. Let's say under the age of 20 never got punished. Over the age of 60, we don't know how many they were. In other words, just taking the men and women of between 20 to 60, there are 1.2 million men and women who left Mitzrayim between the age of 20 to 60. Which means, if you multiply that by 5, you're talking about 6 million people. There were additionally, from that group of people, there were 6 million people. The amount of people that died were 4,750,000 died from that group of 6 million. In other words, in 3 days, 4,750,000 people died. It's a nuclear disaster. I mean, you work it out in time frame. It works out that every single minute, 1,100 people died. Every minute, 1,100 people died. Work it out. Right? That's what we're talking about. We're talking about a disaster that is beyond... And the amazing thing is, Rashi says, and why do you have darkness? That other parts of Klal Yisrael who are around, they can look around the drawers, see who has got stuff there. They're busy with that. It's an amazing thing when you got 1,100 people dying every minute in Klal Yisrael. It's an incredible disaster. So Reb Chatzkel talks about this. Reb Chatzkel Levenstein, he says, why was it that Kodesh Baruch Hu created a situation that 1,100 people died and had to be buried. If they saw all these people, dead people around, then you're not gaining anything by Mitzrayim being blind for 3 days and then seeing, you know, millions of corpses in the streets. Must be that they buried them. So Rav Chazkel asks three questions. Question number one is, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do it in a way that caused so much stress at that particular time? If these people were not fitting to leave Mitzrayim because they weren't Balei Emunah, let them die in their beds in the course of the last 6 months. Die through disease over 6 months, over 3 days, over 6 months. That will cause much less of a Chil Hashem. Natural causes. And it wouldn't put so much stress. Number one. Feel me? Yeah? Number two, after 3 days, Mitzrayim are back into business. They walk around and they see that four-fifth of Klal Yisrael are not there anymore. Where are they? There's massive graveyards of these. So what if you'll be helped by them not seeing them dead? What, how's that helped? But you see massive graveyards. You see four-fifths of Klal Yisrael not there anymore. So how did HaKadosh Baruch Hu manage to hide it simply by them not dying in front of them if four-fifths of Klal Yisrael Poshut weren't there? It's a massive amount of people. 4,750,000 people. You're talking about a massive amount of people. At least. And third of all, why did they deserve to die? What was so bad? They weren't Balei Emunah. Why did they deserve to die? They deserve to die. They lived through 210 years. Lived through generations of slavery. Shleishina Shemom, Leshoinom, Malbushon, they never changed their identity, their names, their clothes. And they weren't Maminim, and therefore they died. Is it so bad? So now, make them forced to come out. Why did they die? So there's a few very important limudim over here that Rabbi Chatzkel learns from these psukim. Number one, and this is a very scary point. Number one is, back to the first question, why did he not make them die naturally? The answer is, because they, at the stage of a few months before Yetzias Mitzrayim, they hadn't yet made that decision. Let me give you an example. You get people, Baruch Hashem, present company excluded to quite a large extent. You get people who've decided to work hard during a lifetime and then they're going to retire. They're going to work hard, they're going to invest, they're going to work here, they're going to work there, and they're going to put 14 hours a day into their job. And at the age of 50, they're going to retire. Right?
Good.
Yeah? At the age of 50, they're going to retire. Yeah? And what they're going to do, they're going to, that time, they can spend more time with the family, they're going to sit and learn, they get involved in chesed, philanthropy, they'll do it. David, you with me? You feeding me? Yeah? It's a good thing to do, right? And these people, they work hard, they build up a business, and it grows, and it grows, and it develops. And at age of 50, yeah, they've actually reached a stage where they could pull the plug, they've got a pension, they could live well, they can live not that well, but they can survive easily. Right? And now the choice is right now, what do I do now? Do I close up? Do I get bought out by the big company? Or do I stay on another few years? Yeah, just to help things get a little bit easier. Make you know, everyone is, Rabbi Twersky says, everyone is making money, not for themselves, for their children. And who are the children making money for? For their children. Yeah, and who's their grandchildren making money for their children? He's waiting to see that special child that all these generations have been making the money for. Right? And the choice is right now, do I pull the plug? Do I get bought out by this big company, put the money in a fund, and leave business and go and sit and learn? Right? That is a moment of truth. The Yetzirah allows them to believe all that time, to believe, yes, you'll be okay, yes, everything will be fine, yes, you can make the money. And he believes that. And a person believes that. When the Yetzirah jump in at the crucial moment, when an offer is being proposed to you, listen, I'm in this company, I'm willing to buy you out, are you willing to take my offer? Yes or no? That is where the Yetzirah comes. I don't know. I'm not sure. Another few more years. That is where the Yetzirah is. Klal Yisrael are now offered to leave Mitzrayim. What's leaving Mitzrayim? Go where? Go into the desert. For how long? Go into the desert. Leave behind what? Leave behind the security. Leave behind Mitzrayim. There were terrified of Klal Yisrael. They could be living there, you know, the homes of the Mitzrayim who died. They could be living up. Do you leave Mitzrayim, yes or no? At that moment in time, four-fifths of Klal Yisrael said, I'm sorry, right now, we're not interested. Until then, they were interested. Because Yetzirah at that stage was not bothering them. Because it wasn't challenging. There was no point challenging them. The challenge only comes at the end. And therefore, to kill them 6 months earlier, because they weren't willing to leave Mitzrayim, they were willing. Because the time had not yet come, the crunch time, to make a decision. Only at a time when it actually comes about to leave Mitzrayim now, they had to make the decision and said, I'm sorry, it's not for us. And that's when they died. Says Reb Chatzkel, and it's brought down, Desa brings it down. I'm hoping, as a shame, it won't happen in a very long. In a short period of time, there'll be a situation, Baruch Hashem, we're not completely immune to this, but there'll be a certain time when Mashiach will come. Mashiach will come. And there are people living, I'm not giving any examples, but there are people living in Chutz Aretz very, very nicely. Very, very comfortably.
Really?
Yeah. You've never been to Williamsburg? Yeah? There are people living, there are people, exactly, no examples. There are people living very, very comfortably. They're living there with their four cars or five cars in the driveway. They're living there with their houses overlooking the lake. They're living there very, very nicely. And mechakalei b'cholim shiyovoi animam in b'muno shleimo. Mashiach will come. You ready? Now's the time to come. You ready? Yeah? You want to leave it all behind? You'll find your flat in Ramat Beit Shemesh. There's a couple of apartments free in Nachal Ma'or. Yeah? 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 Yeah, so let's give out his business card. Yeah? And the property price would not be great. The property price is there with all the Jews leaving, hopefully, Be'ez Hashem. There'll be a lot of supply, not much demand. They'll know that they're not very good, strong negotiating. Will the time come? Tachlis, you want to come? How many people are going to say, you know what? Here are the keys. I'm leaving the front door open. I'm going on the next plane. And this is real. This is a real nesoyin. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. But we daven that it should happen. And it's going to happen. We have to have a munim b'tochen. It's vada going to happen. That is a nesoyin that Klal Yisrael had leaving Mitzrayim. And 4/5 never made it. Frightening. Says of Chatzkel, if that's the case, how do you really know? There's a famous story that this farmer, this little shtetl, yeah, and he hears about Mashiach and he hears about Eretz Yisrael and he's really enthusiastic. You know, he's being beaten by the Cossacks, he's being beaten by this. Comes home and tells his wife, you know, the Rav told me in Shul that one day Mashiach is going to come and we're going to go to Eretz Yisrael and we're going to be free. His wife says, what? What? And what's going to be with our two chickens? We just bought another chicken. And what's going to be with our goat? And we can take it with us, we can't take it with us, and our cow, who's going to supply us with milk? Oy vey, this Mashiach, oh, what are you going to do? You know what, so he says, you know what, don't worry, we lived through Paroi, yeah, we lived through Nebuchadnezzar, we lived through Mashiach as well. But that's what we believe. We believe today, yeah, that, you know, people in Eretz Yisrael, and I've done this, people in Eretz Yisrael, I'm not talking about living in Exville, yeah, I'm talking about living in Eretz Yisrael. They're sitting down on Tisha B'Av, and I know I've tried this. They've planned a trip to go to St. Moritz, or they go to plan a trip to go to for vacation. Yeah, they planned a beautiful 2-week vacation, a 5-star hotel in St. Moritz. And I say to him, he's sitting on the top floor on Tisha B'Av, and I say to him, if Mashiach came right now, and you'd have to cancel all your plans, what would you say? Would you say, I want Mashiach, but no, let me first have my vacation? Or, you know, I'm happy if you can't, but in 2 weeks' time, let me first do a bit of touring. Yeah? Are you one of the 4/5 or not? This is the scary nakuda. The scary nakuda is that certain times that we have an asoyan, and we think we're ready for it, and we're not. And suddenly it comes to crunch time, and unless we've prepared ourselves, we're not able to fight that Nisoyan. Klal Yisrael were not able to fight that Nisoyan. We think, oh, you know, we're fine. You're not fine until, because Yisrael allows you to think you're fine. He's not challenging you until that time. What we have to do is, we have to build up our muscle before that time, and to strengthen ourselves, that when that time comes, we should be ready for it. Achakalei b'chol yom shiyov, I once heard, Reb Noach once said, you know, I asked Reb Noach Weinberg once, you know, davening, how do you tell how do you tell your Talmidim to believe in Mashiach? How do you tell them, how do you make them want to have Mashiach? So he said, I'm not talking about the secular Talmidim, I'm talking about his Talmidim, the Balei Tshuva, the from birth, who knows, whatever. He says, make it personal. Make it personal. You have a brother who's dating a shiksa, and when Mashiach comes, it'll be clearer, and he won't. So daven from Mashiach that Be'ez Hashem, that will be that clarity will bring him back. You have a child who is struggling in his ruchnius in ways that opens the challenge. You know, parents never called it. Daven from Mashiach that the clarity will make him understand the real importance in life. Make it personal. Make it part of you. Don't Mashiach, korbanos. Yes, all very nice, but make it a part of your life. There was once a story that Nosson Sherman once said that he was a camp director in one of the camps in New York, upstate New York, and there was one child who, young child Nebuch, who wasn't focused. He thought he had maybe you know, learning disabilities, but he wasn't focused on any of the classes he was giving. And one time he talked about Chodosh, not allowed to eat new tavur. And he talked about that they made a gzera that you're not allowed to have to build the whole day just in case Beis Midrash gets rebuilt, because even when Beis Midrash could be rebuilt very quickly. Suddenly, this kid like woke up and he had his full attention. And, you know, there was like a metamorphosis. The child changed from this slumbering, dozy child to he was alive. And so he decided to work on it and after the sheikh goes up to the child and says to him, did you enjoy the shiur? He says, yeah, I've never enjoyed the shiur as much as this for a long time. He says, what got you? What? He said, one day Mashiach can come. He said, yeah. So why is that so important to you? He said, both my parents were killed in a traffic accident a few years ago. And they'd be brought up by my grandparents. And that means when Mashiach comes, it'll be Tchias HaMesim. That child made it personal. That child was real with Mashiach. That child felt what it's all about. When Mashiach will come, he'll be ready. That is what we have to be prepared for. We've got to be prepared that the day will come, the Nesoyim will come, and we have to be ready for it now to ensure that we're part of the fifth, not the four-fifths. The other answer, the question we had was that why is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved the Chil Hashem? Lemaisa, at the end of the day, four-fifths of people died. Mitzrayim must have realized that. Why was it saving Chil Hashem? The Teretz is, says Rav Chatzkel, another Teretz, he says that you cannot compare seeing something or hearing about something. If you see something in front of your eyes, you see people dropping dead, you see the Vicars going round and round, you see people burying, that causes so much incredible impact on a person. You cannot compare that to hearing about the fact that four-fifths of Jews died, and just, you know, you're seeing that doesn't mean very much. Seeing something and becoming part of it is what makes all the difference. In other words, you see something, you hear a family member or a neighbor is struggling financially, and you hear, yeah, neighbor's not doing so well. If you go over to his house, open up his fridge, and you see it empty, it hits home. It's a person not so well, you go to visit him in hospital, and you see all the tubes, it hits home. Seeing something. In other words, also a way of dealing with an Nesoyin is dealing with the reality of what the situation is, seeing it clearer. I want to finish off with an incredible story that sort of wraps up what we're saying over here, that there's a concept over here of being ready for Nesoyin. There's a certain moment of truth where things bear down on one and we have to make this decision. The thing of seeing something can make a difference. There's a beautiful story, one of the most beautiful, most touching stories I've heard. There was, I'll tell you exact details over here. This is in one of the books of, I don't remember which one it is, one of the books of the Maggid. It's told over by Rabbi Zvi Teitelbaum, Principal Yeshiva of Greater Washington in Maryland. In summer 2000, there was a 16-year-old Mordechai Kehler. He volunteered to help in a Hebrew home of the age in Greater Washington. Okay. And one of his responsibilities was to encourage the older people, the older men, to join in the minyan. To join in the minyan. And it wasn't always easy. Some of them were more forthcoming, some of them less. But there was one volunteer who worked together with him, who asked a particular man to join in, and the man, not only did he refuse, he was positively abusive. He cursed him. He cursed this volunteer. He cursed him. So this Mordechai went over to him and says to him, I know if you don't want to join the minion, there's no pressure, it's your decision, but why curse him? He's only doing his job. What did he do wrong? Leave him alone. Why did he curse him? Why are you so aggressive? So he said, take me back to the room, I want to tell you something. So he walked him back to his room. He said, I want to tell you a story. He said, I was in a concentration camp. Which one was it? Doesn't say. He was 12 years old. He was there with his father in a concentration camp. And it was coming towards his bar mitzvah. And they knew that in those barracks, there was one man who had a tefillin shel roish. That they would quickly, in the morning, they'd quickly put in tefillin shel roish before the Nazis came. But the father was aware that not so long before, a man had died in a different barracks, and he had a full set of tefillin. And the father said to this boy, this older man now, he said to him, on the day of your bar mitzvah, I want you to wear at least once a pair of proper kosher tefillin in your lifetime. I'm going to be most nefesh to make sure I get the full pair. And the father scrambled across to the other barracks, which was completely ruled, and he found the tefillin in a little bag, and he ran back. And he's clutching this tefillin, and a Nazi guard saw him running from one barrack to the other, and he shot him dead. And this son was watching this. This boy was watching this. He looks out the window and he sees his father shot dead, clutching a pair of tefillin. He ran, he cut the pair of tefillin, and he ran back to the barracks. He said, open up that drawer over there. He opened up the drawer, and he sees inside the drawer a bag with a pair of tefillin inside. He says, those are the damn boxes that my father got and was killed by that god of yours. Am I going to wear those tefillin? Am I going to join in the minion? Okay. What do you answer such a man? Nobody can answer such a person. He's absolutely... What on the side? A couple of days later, there was a man who needed to need very quickly. A man needed to daven, and there were only nine people available. So he needed a tenth man. So he goes to this man, with a lot of courage, and says to him, maybe one of daven. One of daven and a shachris. You again? Yeah. Well, just do me a favor. Okay, you know what? You're a sweet boy. I'll come with you. Mordechai says to him, maybe you want to take your tefillin with you? Man said, alright. Yeah. Takes it with him. Takes him to the back of shul. The man rolls up his sleeves and starts putting on those tefillin. He has never ever. Don't know how he knew how to put on tefillin. He never wore tefillin. And he sits there completely absorbed in his thoughts, way after the davening is finished, tears pouring down his face. And he's sitting there with his tefillin, clutching his tefillin. Cut long story short, every day Mordechai would fetch him and he'd bring him to the shul with his tefillin and with his siddur and he'd daven. One day he comes off the elevator and he sees this man's bed is empty. Where is he? He's in the hospital. He phones up the daughter. The daughter says, My father just passed away. He said, but I want to tell you something. Please come to the shiva. Came to the shiva in the home. And he said, my father, on the way to the hospital, he said, we forgot something in the home. Please go back. Went back to fetch a tefillin. He said, my father put on the tefillin for the last. He said, Kriya Shema. He died. He said, Kriya Shema had a terrible stroke and he died. This is a person who's Mosen Nefesh. This is a person who, when it came to crunch time, he made the right decision. This is somebody who died bound to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the koyach we have as Jews. This is the koyach we have to be one of those fifths, not one of those four fifths. Thank you very much.